This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Abby Omadumbi is an assistant vice president and an economist with PNC Financial Services Group, and he joins us on a monthly basis to talk about the economy, how it does locally as well as nationally. And Abby, as always, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris. Well, it's a pleasure to be back.
Let's get underway and take a look here first about, take a look at first local and regional for what's going on now, and then we'll get a picture of how 2020 went. Let's look first on what the PNC Economics most recent economic outlook for the regional here in Northwest Indiana and Indiana and the national economies looks.
Right. So it's been a very interesting year, to say the least. So the economies of Northeast Indiana and Northwest Chicago have been on very solid footing until the pandemic started. So this pandemic was affected most industries, including the major economic drivers. But on the bright side of things, the recovery has been much faster than expected in the region. So our initial forecasts were exceeded, based on the substantial stimulus that was implemented by Congress. So looking forward, we expect things to get worse before they get better. Mm-hmm. Things are likely going to get worse because of the reimposing of restrictions. The governor of Indiana recently extended the public health emergency to the end of December, and this is going to cause businesses to operate at less than full capacity, which is going to affect economic activity. By mid-2021, we expect economic activity to pick up. If the vaccinations go through successfully, and if people take the vaccinations, there's likely to be a pickup in economic activity from mid-2021.
Mm-hmm. Now, for folks that may not be aware of it, what do the expected economic drivers locally and nationally seem to be?
Sure. So locally, we're talking, the manufacturing industry. It's a very manufacturing-intensive economy. Also, tourism and also agriculture. Mm-hmm. The manufacturing industry was weak before the pandemic started, so it may take a while for it to return back to pre-pandemic levels. But with the vaccination being happening successfully in 2021, we expect to pick up an economic activity in all those three sectors by mid-2021.
Mm-hmm. Now, what seems to be your 2020 summary on how the regional labor market went?
Right. So, it's been a very challenging year. Things were in excellent shape before this pandemic started. And then we saw the pandemic affect all industries. So the pandemic was an exogenous event. The fundamentals of the regional economy were very strong. This pandemic was akin to a war, really. But on the bright side of things, things are expected to pick up, especially in leisure and hospitality, as soon as folks get vaccinated and they feel comfortable congregating in the public. We expect to see continued recovery of the leisure and hospitality industry and also the manufacturing industry. When folks start going out and there's an increase in the demand for oil, that's going to bode well for the manufacturing industry, and it's going to cause an improvement in the manufacturing industry in the mid to long term.
I know the Congress is still working, and hopefully we'll have some type of stimulus package prepared here before they try to take off for the holiday coming up. And is there any additional stimulus that you folks have kind of baked into the PNC forecast?
Right. So one of the reasons why this recovery was as swift as it was from May was because of the substantial stimulus passed from Congress. So Congress passed over $2 trillion in stimulus, the CARES Act, which was directed at consumers, small and mid-sized businesses, states and local governments. It's extremely important for there to be additional stimulus in order to make this recovery strong. So in our forecast, we're calling for about $1.5 trillion in additional stimulus passed by Congress in the next few months. And it's extremely important for for the economy to get that additional boost to keep this recovery strong.
Yeah, does it seem that we might get a full recovery, though, without stimulus? Although it probably doesn't seem likely, does it?
Look, Chris, it's going to be a very slow and uneven recovery without additional stimulus. Now we're nearing a rough patch with the expiration of pandemic-related unemployment benefits in December. We just got weak retail sales numbers today, so retail sales were weak in October and November, and also with the reimposing of restrictions. So things are likely to get slower. The economy economic activity is likely to slow down in the next couple of months. But in the long term, from like mid-2021 to going forward, we expect things to pick up.
Now, does it look like that if Congress does approve the stimulus package as they've been pushed to do so here before the end of the calendar year, does it look like we might see some recovery early on in 2021, or will it be later than that?
It'll be extremely important if Congress passes it before the end of this year. Mm-hmm. Again, just because of all the factors I just mentioned, the reimposing of restrictions, the expiration of unemployment benefits at the end of December, and also like the data we've been seeing in recent months has been showing a slowdown. So it's extremely important for stimulus to be passed as soon as possible because the economy is kind of in a rough patch right now. So, you know, the additional stimulus should be extremely helpful for consumers and businesses.
Well, Abby, thank you for spending time with us today to talk about how the local and the regional and the national economy is doing. And we look forward to have a chance to talk with you again here in January of next year and with the hopes that maybe there'll be some changes to talk about. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Chris. Happy holidays.
Thank you. Same to you. Abby Obadumbi is the Assistant Vice President, and he's an economist with PNC Financial Services Group. Healthcare workers are learning that COVID-19 has the power to raise blood sugar to dangerous levels, and that's creating serious challenges for hospitals. Side Effects Public Media's Farah Yousry has more in our continuing coverage about the interplay between COVID and diabetes.
And you don't even have Fortnite, so I think you...
I don't have Fortnite, you're right. I am definitely not that cool.
William Rentel and his wife recovered from COVID-19 back in March. They rode it out at home with their son. Rentel is a nurse practitioner at Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center. He's also a type 1 diabetic. He says he's always kept his blood sugar well managed, but COVID changed that.
My insulin requirements doubled during the infection just to keep my blood sugars on a high range of normal during the time.
Having too much sugar in the blood means your body is either not producing the amount you need from a hormone called insulin or is not using it well enough. This can damage blood vessels supplying vital organs. And with a COVID infection, it seems that even non-diabetics may have a hard time with insulin too.
In the early time of COVID, 50% of those patients with a COVID diagnosis were on insulin.
That's Mary Ellen Neal, nurse and project manager at Indiana University Health Methodist Hospital. Other severe illnesses could cause elevated blood sugar levels too, but COVID is doing that at a rate that worries healthcare workers.
Of course, we need to control those blood sugars. So insulin is the treatment for that, and often it's IV insulin infusions.
To deliver that kind of care, nurses had to enter a COVID patient's room to measure blood sugar levels and adjust insulin doses as frequently as every hour, exposing the staff to the virus and using lots of protective equipment. But now, Methodist Hospital is putting glucose sensors on patients.
So this technology allows the nurse to look at a device placed outside the room and see what the blood sugar is.
These sensors are typically used by diabetics at home, but the FDA has approved their use in hospitals to manage COVID patients.
Those challenges are huge.
That's Dr. Rudika Pabbusui, professor of internal medicine at the University of Michigan. She's talking about the lack of proven treatment protocols that take into account the range of problems COVID can cause. She and her colleagues have come up with an algorithm that aims to do just that.
We are not looking only at one-time glucose level, but we are also looking at the kidney involvement, at the these markers of inflammation that now we are routinely measuring. And we also measure now all these clotting markers.
This is even more crucial for patients who have diabetes. Studies show that COVID-19 can cause blood clotting that can lead to strokes. Dr. Pabbusui says diabetics are already at an increased risk of strokes. So for them, COVID poses a double threat.
It may be beyond the severe phase just in the hospital. So if you continue to have some clots that may have been not recognized, at some point one could, you know, shoot up and either cause problems in your heart or in your brain.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
Back at his home in Columbus, Ohio, Rentel wonders if this is what might have happened to him. 6 months after he recovered from COVID, he had a stroke, which left him partially blind.
Which we hope will recover, but we won't know for a year. My wife has basically stepped in and helped me with all of my daily activities.
I just loaded it with 3 mL of insulin into the cartridge itself. And now we'll load a new cartridge. So go ahead and click the button to change cartridge.
Rentel asked his doctors whether his diabetes or COVID triggered the stroke.
They felt that our COVID infection was the most probable cause of the stroke. But we still couldn't get a definitive answer.
Further studies may offer conclusive answers. Until then, clinicians agree that, as long as the pandemic persists, diabetics need to keep tight control of their blood sugar levels, because a COVID infection could be devastating. For Side Effects Public Media, I'm Farah Yusri.
The long-awaited opening of the new Klein Avenue Bridge in East Chicago is just a matter of days away. The general manager for operations at the bridge construction site, Terry Velligan, was on Regionally Speaking not long ago to talk about the project that's nearing completion.
It's a unique structure in itself. It's a balanced cantilever bridge, but they've been around for quite a number of years. But we've taken considerable interest in maintaining and owning the bridge as Klein Avenue Bridge. So we put in some protocols and processes to ensure that this bridge is done. Number one priority for us is commuter safety.
Mm-hmm.
And also we incorporated some aesthetics that will give pride to Northwest Indiana and East Chicago. It's going to be a beautiful bridge. Anybody that passes by it now will see the unique structure of the bridge and how it's being constructed.
When you came up with the idea, you and your designers with FIG Bridge Partners, and what things were you looking at in particular that you wanted to make unique with this bridge design that maybe some of the others the company's made? They might have some features that have worked in the past, but you want to make it special this time.
One of the things that we focused on is, first and foremost, is actually the impact it'll have on Lake County.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of traffic. I mean, that was our very first focus. The bridge itself, in terms of aesthetics and how it's constructed, was a close second, but it's unique in the fact that it's a box girder, so each segment of the bridge was actually in a controlled environment when we're making the boxes or segments, as we call them.
Right.
So we actually constructed a casting building, and we casted all the segments in that casted building to create a controlled environment. So that's really what we wanted to do, is make sure we control every aspect of it, and as well as remain on target to complete the bridge.
Right. Now, when you set up the casting building, it gave you the opportunity to create these segments one at a time and take them out for storage at the time. How long did they have to stand out outdoors in storage before the crews could actually put them in place up there on the bridge itself?
One of the things that we did is we needed to make enough of the segments that we wouldn't get ahead of ourselves when they started actually putting up the segments.
Right.
So, we casted a number of segments well ahead of time, and once they reached a certain PSI strength, as you call it,
right,
then we were able to set them outside. And obviously, you know, in this area, the conditions change quite rapidly. So one of the things is that the designers and engineers ensured that each segment was made to specs, and then we were able to set it outside.
Now, bring us up to date here in the last few months. Unfortunately, with the coronavirus pandemic causing, I'm sure, some delays in getting some of the work done, what did you and the crews have to do to try to work around that, or could you continue doing a lot of this work even though the pandemic is underway?
We continued to do a lot of this work while the pandemic was on its way.
Yeah.
One of the things that we focused on is, again, how do we complete this with everything else going on? And I think we achieved that. So we kept working, made some adjustments, but everybody kept working, and we're looking to get this bridge complete and opened up.
That's great. Give us an idea of what this last month has been like here when you finally got to the point early in November that you got to the last segments to put them in place. What was the atmosphere like on the work site in getting these last segments ready to go?
I think that really comes from the workforce in Northwest Indiana. We are a strong workforce here, and they take pride in everything that they do. And I think that was one of the things that the workforce really showed is they have an interest in this bridge. They take pride in their area, whether it be Northwest Indiana or some South Chicago. So it was really exciting for them as well as us to reach a point at we could see the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
So that's and I commend the workforce. They worked very hard to build this bridge. It's a long project, but now they could see that we're coming to the end, and I think, you know, they're excited about it.
Yeah. So. Now, Terry, since this bridge is about to be completed, it's hoped to be opened up to traffic in the early part of winter months coming up. What are you going to be able to do, since it's going to be a toll bridge, would be able to do to make it certainly convenient for people to get them used to traveling on the bridge and to be able to get the big truck traffic that has been clogging up 80-94 and probably to an extent I-65 as well, all trying to connect up with Chicago, to get them to be able to use this bridge now instead of the old route?
One of the things is we have a marketing plan in place. We worked really hard with NDOT to redo a lot of the highway signage to now give notice where Klein Avenue Bridge is. A lot of signs will be going on 80-94. We also have a marketing plan that will incorporate a lot of billboards, newspaper, media such as yourself, to give notice to the commuters and the truck traffic, not only that the bridge is opening. We want to educate, we want to create awareness where the bridge is located, and then the third thing we're doing is offer incentives. So the first month of opening is going to be free, so we entice people to try us out and see how they like the bridge, and really to see how much of a faster route it is into and out of Chicago. So we're kind of like the gateway of Lake County, just on the southern tip of Chicago and northern tip of Indiana. So we think that a lot of people will see the benefits of taking Klein Avenue Bridge and going in and out of Lake County.
That's Terry Valligan of Klein Avenue Bridge, LLC, and the official bridge opening ceremony is currently scheduled for next week. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you very much for being with us, and we'll be back with you tomorrow.